On the afternoon of the formal ball, I dropped in to see the Guthries at their red house at the foot of the Academia Bridge. The interior was furnished with chintz-covered chairs and sofas and looked more like an apartment on the east side of Manhattan than a Venetian dwelling. Bob and Bea Guthrie were sitting in the living room surveying a large board propped up on an easel and covered with name tags pinned to circles representing tables. "Ever seated a dinner party for 350 people?" Guthrie asked. "Try doing it when half a dozen people call up at the last minute saying, 'We simply must have so-and-so at our table,' which means you have to do the whole thing all over again." "I suppose it would be especially difficult to do," I said, "if you were carrying on a really ugly personal feud at the same time." Guthrie was startled by my directness, but recovered quickly. "I guess that means you've heard," he said with a laugh. "Half of Venice has heard," I said. He looked again at the seating chart. "Well, we're about done with this, for now. Want to go for a boat ride?" We went outside to Guthrie's motor launch, a Boston Whaler, which was tied up at the edge of a small canal just beyond the gate. Guthrie stood at the wheel and backed out into the Grand Canal, then turned and headed in the direction of the Rialto. He spoke over the noise of the motor. "On one level, sure, it's a quarrel between Larry and me. But it's really more involved than that. There are fundamental differences between most of our board members and the small group of dissidents who support Larry. Typically, members of our board are people of accomplishment. Save Venice is an avocation for them, not a principal activity in their lives. They enjoy each other's company, they love Venice, and it gives them satisfaction to help preserve the city. They contribute more to Save Venice in time and money than they get out of it. They're givers. The dissidents are quite a different breed of cat. They have money, but no occupation of importance, no real accomplishments. Save Venice assumes too great an importance in their lives because they don't have any other claim to fame. It's the horse they ride on. They introduce themselves using organizational titles. To prove their importance, they need to take credit for the organization's accomplishments, even though they do no work themselves. In fact, they refer to the people who put in long hours as the hired help. They're takers. The dissidents use Save Venice to promote their own social lives, which is the only life they really have. They invite their high-flying friends and hoped-for friends to our parties and galas free of charge, and in return they get invited on cruises and to country estates for shooting weekends. These non-paying guests have become a problem. We're getting more and more of them. And the dissidents monopolize them. They hire limousines to take them to events in the countryside while the rest of us travel on buses. And they pass by sitting grandly in the back seat. They arrive late and leave early. They all sit together at tables by themselves, snubbing the paying guests. And they really don't care how offensive it is to the other people. "I was under the impression," I said, "that these non-paying guests provide the sort of glamour that attracts the paying guests." "They do," said Guthrie. "But that was more important in the early years. Save Venice has become so well known that it's a draw in its own right. We don't need those people anymore." We were just then passing the Palazzo Pisani Moretta, where the ball was to be held that night. Caterers were unloading crates from barges at the water gate. Guthrie gestured toward the palace. "It's the dissidents who always insist on being seated near the windows when it's hot or the fireplace when it's cold. They're very demanding, exigent people. Hell, I still practice surgery 18 hours a day. I really don't need this."
"Then why don't you quit?" I asked.
B and I were on the verge of doing just that. We had already written our letters of resignation when the charges of financial impropriety started flying. That was the dissident's big mistake, because it meant we couldn't quit. We could never leave under that sort of cloud. We had to stay and clear our names.